Computer Wars.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning, I'm Bill Radke. The Google-Microsoft battle goes on. Last month, Microsoft launched the new search engine, Bing, to compete with Google's search dominance. Well, last night, Google said it's launching its own operating system to take on Windows. Joining us live, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
So what do we know about Google's new operating system?
Well, Bill, it's called Google Chrome OS. OS, or operating system, is the standard software that controls a computer. Google says the operating system will be built using open source, meaning anyone can have access to the underlying code and play with it. That's the way a lot of software is written these days, but that approach stands in direct contrast to Microsoft, which guards its source code like Coke does its secret recipe.
Yes. Now, how would Google's operating system be so different from what we get with Windows?
Well, the driving philosophy behind Google Chrome OS is something called cloud computing. In cloud computing, everything is done online. Software runs through the web browser. All your information is stored on some remote server. The computer you actually hold in your hands is basically a dumb terminal.
What would this challenge mean for Microsoft?
Well, cloud computing is a neutron bomb to Microsoft's business model. Microsoft makes billions by selling its Windows operating system and software like Microsoft Office to run off that system. Google Chrome OS would be free, and it would completely eliminate the need for Windows and Office.
Well, Microsoft has done pretty well for itself. I imagine they have a response.
Well, nothing official yet, but it is worth noting that Microsoft is coming out with its own new operating system this fall called Windows 7, and Microsoft is still the 1,000-pound gorilla of software, operating systems, even internet browsers, Internet Explorer. Google, for instance, introduced its own web browser 9 months ago, and it's only picked up about 6% of the market. We'll see if they can do better with their new OS, which will start appearing in the second half of 2010, about a year from now.
Marketplace's Dan Gretsch, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
President Obama has arrived in Italy for his first Group of Eight summit. World leaders are talking about ways to ease the global recession. The Italian government would also like to give economic and emotional support to local earthquake survivors. But reporter Megan Williams says that effort has not gone over so well.
The goal of this week's G8 in Italy is to fuel the commitment to fighting hunger, curbing carbon emissions, and promoting economic growth. The preparations, though, have fueled resentment. Italy decided to hold the G8 in the earthquake-destroyed town of L'Aquila, supposedly to help pump money into the region through foreign joint ventures. 50,000 earthquake survivors are still homeless, many in tents. Recently, earthquake tremors in the area have prompted more people to leave their homes. The homeless complain the government has ignored their plight at the expense of the G8 preparations, while everyone, from foreign delegations to opposition politicians, grumble about lack of focus.
Berlusconi.
Instead of preparing the agenda for the G8, Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has been chasing skirts, said opposition leader Antonio Di Pietro, referring to the recent scandal involving Italy's leader and escorts. In L'Aquila, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
The stock sell-off that hit Wall Street yesterday continued today in Asia. Japan's Nikkei got the worst of it, down more than 2%. Commodity prices keep heading south. Oil has now dropped to just about $62 a barrel. Yesterday, Wall Street stocks fell about 2%. Investors are nervously awaiting earnings season, which unofficially starts later today when aluminum maker Alcoa announces quarterly results. European markets had been holding up pretty well all day, but the London and Paris indices have now dropped about 0.5%.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
When recession hits, building projects get abandoned. Well, not everybody thinks that is a bad thing. In Brooklyn, New York, developers were supposed to be building a massive complex, millions of square feet of housing and offices, and a basketball arena for the New Jersey Nets. Superstar architect Frank Gehry was signed on to the project, called Atlantic Yards. Now Sally Herships reports those plans have been scaled back.
The Atlantic Yard site lies in Brooklyn's District 35. Letitia James is the local city council rep. She's a big critic of the developer Forest City, and she hates the new architect's design for the basketball arena.
Now it's just a barn, an airplane hangar, a mess.
Some Brooklynites look at that so-called mess and get nervous about what their neighborhood might look like. But the recession could come to their rescue. Money has run so short that Forest City may not even be able to build the arena, let alone the office and residential buildings. Martin Filler is an architecture critic for the New York Review of Books. He says recessions can be a good thing for city skylines.
Well, not only does a recession not cause bad architecture, but in fact, I think it often has a salutary effect, what Daniel Patrick Moynihan once called benign neglect.
In other words, tough times mean less funding, which can prevent what Filler calls ill-conceived and ill-advised projects. He says architects on a budget often look more realistically at size, scale, and affordability.
That was certainly the case during the Great Depression, when bridges, highways, dams, housing, all kinds of wonderful initiatives took place.
The Atlantic Yards project may have looked wonderful to City Hall when it was proposed back in 2003. Gary's model featured lots of glass and a soaring tower. But Brooklyn residents like Letitia James were more focused on issues like the threat of losing their homes through eminent domain. The last thing they need, she says, is another development cluttering the neighborhood, no matter how beautiful it might be.
What we do not need is a basketball arena for 20,000 fans who do not live in Brooklyn, who cannot afford the seats.
So it doesn't really matter who the architect is.
I could care less.
And it may not matter. Some area residents are suing for the right to stay, and New York's High Court of Appeals has accepted the case. A victory could sink the Atlantic Yards project for good and leave the Brooklyn skyline undisturbed. In Brooklyn, New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in this morning. I hope you have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.